Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome, and we are cordially inviting you to listen in tonight to the Eastern Airlines radio show. Thanks for being with us. We start talking about Eastern Airlines every Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on your computer's internet dial, www.ealradioshow.com, or at www.blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie. Welcome. The hosts for tonight's radio show are from many locations: South, North, and Central Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, New York, and on occasion, Martha's Vineyard. Our hosts for tonight's radio broadcast include Chuck Albright. Hello, Chuck. How are things in America's favorite retirement village?
Probably a lot better than those poor people up north. Today we had a balmy 63 degrees, and we'll go down to 40 tonight, so that's not going to be too bad. Tomorrow it's going to pop back up to 70, and clear and sunny. In fact, I got a tea time at 9:15 in the morning. So it has been a great time here. We love the colder weather because during the summer it gets really hot here in Central Florida. So take it away and check with the other people.
Thank you, Chuck. And Neil Holland, as you know, is our producer and engineer in beautiful Ponte Vedra, Florida, near St. Augustine. Neil.
Yes, sir. It's beautiful right here in Ponte Vedra. We're halfway between St. Augustine, America's oldest city, Jacksonville, Florida, home of the Jaguars. And World Golf Village is right here, close by. And the temperature is really nice, even though it's going to be down to about 34 or 35 with a light frost on the ground tomorrow morning is what they're forecasting. So I really love it. I like this chill in the air. It doesn't get too cold. And then, fortunately, it warms back up again. So there you are.
Well, thank you, Neil. Well, our official Yankee living in New York is George Jen. And, George, how's the snowfall we've been seeing on TV affecting your fishing?
Well, fishing, I think, might be over until the codfish come in, which is usually in January, because it's absolutely freezing up here tonight, and the wind is blowing about 30 miles per hour, and the temperature is supposed to go down to 14 degrees. So there's no fishing on my calendar for the foreseeable future. And you guys, you're certainly making me jealous talking from beautiful Florida. I might just have to take a trip down there in the near future.
Well, thank you, George. And from beautiful Boca Raton, just down from West Palm Beach, is Cecile Entriago. Cecile is with her partner, Charles, who's an avid fisherman, and we hope to hear more from him later on future broadcasts. Cecile.
Good evening. Today in Boca Raton, the weather is 72 degrees, and it's going to get a low of 68. Whoa. That is a far contrast to Detroit. Baltimore is playing today in Detroit, which I checked their weather is going to be 10 degrees with snow. So Charlie wanted me to tell you that the cool front and the northeast winds brings out the sailfish. So there's a lot of sailfish going on, and there's a tournament set for this Saturday. So there'll be a lot of sailfish, and next time we go on live air, I'll give a report as to what they caught.
Thanks, Cecile. And I see John Ruth is with us tonight. John. John's our travel expert, and I'm sure he has some warmer weather, winter destination specials. John.
Well, good evening. It's a balmy 30 degrees here in Philadelphia this evening with forecast snow tomorrow morning, but we have deals in the Caribbean for those who want to go on the website for the Eastern Airlines Travel Club. We have a lot of specials running right now, and I'm sure you can find something to warm the cockles of your heart. Just go to www.fly-eastern.com, and you'll see the travel website up there with all the warm weather deals.
Thank you, John. And then that leaves me. I'm Steve Thompson here in Roaring Gap, North Carolina, where the winter is wintertime. Not bad right now. The temperature 43 degrees under clear skies, and we're expecting some balmy 50-degree temperatures tomorrow.
Hey, Steve.
Now, just a little housekeeping before we go into our program. Our listeners can join your hosts at any time during the broadcast and share their thoughts and memories of Eastern or ask questions of your hosts and guests. Our telephone contact to be live on the air is area code 213-816-1611 or toll free 877-572-1861. And let me repeat those numbers. It's area code 213-816-1611 or toll-free 877-572-1861. Now, either number will get you into our caller board, which where you can join in our discussion. Now, don't forget, if you want to be with us live, just press the number 1 on your phone's keypad.
Steve, we do have also with us, saw his number pop up just shortly before we open our show, Howard Mucci. Howard, how are you tonight?
I'm doing just fine. Looking forward to your reading of my story.
Okay. Well, first, before we do that, let's play a little music to get us in the mood of the season.
The Christmas season's here at last. I wish you peace and joy. I'll sing this song of times long gone and pray you will enjoy. For the fondest memories I recall were on a Christmas morn when my dear father sang his songs and Christ the King was born. Songs he sang so loudly rang throughout our happy house. But when Mother took her turn, he sat as quietly as a mouse. The fondest memories I recall were on a Christmas morn. How Mother sang the sweetest sons, and Christ the King was born. I am my father's son, you know, and I sing on Christmas Day. I sing a song to days long gone and those who passed away. I have four children, proud and strong, and they have children too. And on Christmas morn, they sing along, just like we used to do. The fondest memories we shall have take place on Christmas morn. My children's children sing their songs, and Christ the King is born.
That was just absolutely beautiful. And now, Neil, can you tell us about tonight's show?
Yes, the person singing that song was John McDermott, and I love to hear the Irish song come out. And we all have favorite Christmas stories and memories and traditions from the past, or perhaps some Eastern memories of Christmases when we were working for that great airline. Remember, maybe perhaps parties, office parties with Eastern. Perhaps flights for the flight crew, particular flights I can recall, and I'm sure many did fly on Christmas Eve and during the holidays have their own memories of those stories, wonderful stories. Layovers, passenger stories as well. All of the people trying to get home, and especially in the northern climates, perhaps the snow was too high and they couldn't get out of the airport. For those that are listening tonight, perhaps you want to join our show and call us, and we'll see your number pop up on our screen board. And if you'd like to share an Eastern memory, but perhaps a story that you'd like to share, like the one that Steve discovered and sent to me to see if I thought it would be of interest to our listeners. And I think, Steve, you found it on the Internet. Steve, can you tell us about that?
Yes. Thank you, Neil. Drawing from a lifetime of experiences that included a tour of duty in the U.S. Navy and 29 years as an Ohio State Trooper, Bob Welch has mesmerized listeners around campfires in churches, schools, and auditoriums with inspirational stories. Bob's stories deliver messages that will put a lump in your throat, a tear in your eye, a chuckle in your belly, or even a profound thought in your mind. We want to share with you one of his stories about Christmas Eve's past and present. Now, I must warn you that you'll need a box of tissues nearby as you listen to this. And now, A Christmas Story by Bob Welch.
I'm going to tell you a story from my highway patrol days. Let's simply call this my Christmas Eve. The hour is late. Should go to bed. Near midnight, I believe. But memories keep me wide awake this snowy Christmas Eve. Yes, memories of my kids moved on. Each has their separate life. And how the holidays have changed since angels took my wife. The toys, the food, the Christmas cheer. My wife would bear the load because I would work most holidays, state trooper on the road. Just sitting in my easy chair, so many years retired, I reminisce on times gone by and all that has transpired. Of all the many happenings that seem to come to light, a multitude of them occurred right on this very night. A drunken woman in Iraq who died on Christmas Eve leaves memories of a tragic case most people can't believe. I had to drive to where she lived to tell her next of kin. Found the run-down mobile home she had been living in. The person answering the door, I still recall today, a little girl, about 4 years old. She said, "I'm Sue McKay." I asked her if her dad was home and felt the longest pause. She said, "My daddy ran away." "You must be Santa Claus. My mommy said you'd come tonight if I just stayed in bed and bring a pretty doll for me." It's what my mommy said. I broke the law that Christmas Eve, did not call child's care. They'd merely put her in a room, and that I couldn't bear. I picked her up and took her home. My wife tucked her in bed and wrapped the pretty doll for her, just like her mommy said. Adopted by a loving home, and soon they moved away. I won't forget that Christmas Eve and little Sue McKay. Another bitter Christmas Eve, a blizzard to behold, had left a family in the ditch, just trapped there in the cold. By grace of God, I spotted them all cold and gaunt with fright, drove them to a motel room to safely spend the night. One Christmas Eve, a homeless man, shivering and wet, was trying hard to get a ride I'm sure he'd never get. I picked him up and drove him to a diner on the hill to warm his bones and left him with a $5 bill. Strange how when you're all alone with memories you recall, you think of everything you've done. Was it worth it all? I think about my God, my job, my children, and my wife. Would I do it all the same? Could I relive my life? Then comes a knock upon my door. This late, who could it be? A neighbor? Or has Santa Claus come to visit me? The figure standing in the cold gives me a sudden fright. A trooper with that solemn look. "Dear God, who's died tonight?" I'm flashing back through bygone years and how I'd often stood on someone's porch to bring them news, and it was never good. Is this how life gets back at me? For misery I've induced, for pain I've caused some other folks, has now come home to roost. But looking in the trooper's eyes, my mind is in a whirl. I see a pleasant countenance. The trooper is a girl. She smiled and reached to shake my hand, and silence wasn't broke until a tear rolled down her cheek, and then she softly spoke. "I'm sure you don't remember me, but thought I'd stop and say, God bless you on this Christmas Eve. I'm Trooper Sue McKay."
If there's a dry eye in this group now, I want to hear from you.
Pass the hankies.
Well, the story is very touching. I think I have one that might water the eye as well. And the person that wrote this story is with us tonight. And he has asked me to, instead of him reading this story, he asked me to do it. So I take delight in reading A Wonderful Christmas, as it's titled. I like to call it The Little Red Bike or Bicycle. It was 1933, the beginning of the Great Depression, and a truly miserable time for most people. The Depression hit virtually every business and industry in the country, leaving a lot of people jobless and many homeless. The jobless rate was over 25%, and one out of four people were taking wage cuts or only working part-time. The Depression affected everyone, so many people were forced to put cardboard inserts into shoes because the soles had holes in them. No one took notice of hand-me-down clothes. We were too young to know anything different, so we, like so many others, accepted our circumstances as a normal way of life. Still, we knew the times must have been really difficult because I can clearly remember my mother crying at night and my father trying his best to console her. I was 11 years old at the time, and my brother was 6. We were living in a rented two-story house in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey. Upstairs were two bedrooms, one where my mother and father slept, and the other where my mother, my brother, and I slept in twin beds. Between the bedrooms was a bathroom. Downstairs was a living room, a small dining room, and a kitchen. There was also a basement where my father had a workshop. He was an engineer, educated in Germany, working in this country as a patent attorney. With an engineering degree and a great deal of practical experience, he was skilled in all phases of metal and woodworking. He could literally build or repair anything. Unfortunately, as a patent attorney, he had very few clients in these critical times. He would occasionally build working models for client patent applications. Now he was building models for other attorneys in the basement, bringing in enough pay to pay the rent, but not much more. One day I was in his basement workshop and tried to cut a piece of wood using the electric table saw. In the process, I managed to cut off the tip of my thumb. There was blood everywhere, on the table saw, on the floor, all the way upstairs as I made my way to the bathroom to wrap a towel around my thumb. I was sitting there waiting for my mother, who had gone to the grocery. She had a fit when she returned and saw all the blood. Later that evening when my father came home, he looked at my thumb, rebandaged it, and merely said, "Your thumb will be fine, but from now on, stay out of the basement." It was now a few days before Christmas, and we were looking forward to it, although we knew that there wasn't going to be much under the tree. I had always wanted a bicycle, but I knew that there was no way we could afford anything that expensive. Banned from the basement, I had no way of knowing that my father had somehow found an old bicycle and was working evenings in his workshop to refurbish it. He had taken it completely apart and had the handlebars and sprocket assembly chrome-plated at a friend's plating shop. He had repainted the frame a fire engine red, replaced the tires, and even found a new seat. With the meticulous care that with which he did everything, the finished bicycle looked absolutely brand new. Christmas Eve was when we opened our gifts. We had a small tree with lights and decorations that stood on a table in the corner of the living room. On the table were a number of gift-wrapped boxes containing mostly socks, underwear, and a pair of boots for my brother. My mother was an absolutely wonderful baker. She had recipes for all kinds of cookies she had baked when she was a young woman in Germany. I don't know how she did it, or where the money came from, but she managed to scrape together enough to buy the necessary butter, sugar, and other essentials for her baking endeavors. The day or so before Christmas, she would start to bake wonderful assortments of delicious cookies, producing a tantalizing smell that wafted from the kitchen through the house. Now, in addition to the other gifts under the tree, there were also a half dozen little boxes, each containing an assortment of cookies that would be given to friends and neighbors. It was a small gift, but appreciated by the people who received them. It's hard to imagine life at that time today. Although we knew there was nothing too exciting under the tree, it didn't dampen the enthusiasm we had. We would still open each gift with the same anticipation and excitement, even if it was nothing more than some underwear or a pair of socks. I wonder if today's children experience the same excitement and pleasure when they open their gifts of iPods, iPhones, Androids, Blackberries, and endless computer games. We went to bed that night happy with our gifts, particularly happy with the orange we each had received. Now, the orange was a treat that had to be savored. It had to be eaten slowly, one segment at a time, and some had to be carefully saved to be eaten later. The next morning was Christmas Day, and I had gotten out of bed. Still a little sleepy, I started downstairs and could not believe my eyes. There, standing next to the table with the Christmas tree, stood a bicycle. Not just a bicycle, but a beautiful, glistening red bicycle. I sat down on the top step and could not move. I was mesmerized by the sight of that bicycle. I just sat there, frozen in place, not moving, just staring through the banister rails. My mother was making breakfast and called me to come downstairs. Her words spurred me into action. I'm not sure whether I leaped down or tumbled down, but suddenly I could not get to the bicycle fast enough. My father had somehow found just the right size bicycle for me. I started to get on the bicycle, and my mother said, "Don't you dare ride that bicycle in the living room." Still in my pajamas and slippers, I wheeled the bicycle down the front steps and started pedaling furiously down the sidewalk. I'd ridden bikes belonging to other kids, but this was my very own. My very own. Imagine that. I must have ridden around the block three times when I heard my father calling. It was midwinter and cold, but I had no idea the temperature was closing to freezing. My father said, "It's cold. You better put on some clothes if you want to ride that bike." Then he went on, "Son, it would also be nice if you gave your brother a ride on the bicycle." Remember, all he got for Christmas was a pair of boots. I ran upstairs and changed into outdoor wear and urged my brother to do the same. He put on his new boots and we took off together, with him sitting on the seat and me pushing the bike along. We soon came to a much better arrangement. I sat him across the handlebars with his feet on either side of the front wheel, and I sat on the bicycle seat and pedaled. There was nothing stopping us. I know I must pedal for what seemed like hours. We went in all directions, past every house where someone we knew lived, so everyone could see my beautiful red bike. My brother abruptly announced that he was hungry. And it suddenly occurred to me that he and I had not eaten breakfast. We made our way home where our mother had a bowl of hot oatmeal and a cup of hot cocoa waiting for us. We could not have been happier, my brother with his new boots and I with my new red bicycle. What a wonderful Christmas. It was indeed a Christmas to be remembered. And an afterthought, no matter how little, we can all be grateful for what we have. And the author of that story, or the writer of that story, is with us tonight, Howard Mucci.
Here.
Born in Germany. And you have compiled a bunch of marvelous stories, and I just thought that would be appropriate for this time of year. Howard, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, you did a marvelous job reading it. I couldn't have done it any better. And you know, looking back, everybody was in the same boat, so we had no idea that we were deprived. We didn't even think about it. Nobody thought anything about putting a piece of cardboard in the shoe if it had a hole, because everybody was doing exactly the same thing. So when you look back on it, on those times, you would think that you'd feel deprived, but We never had that sense. I guess because so many people were in exactly the same situation. But anyhow, I'll never forget that bicycle.
Well, we know the story now, and thanks for writing it. And folks, you can pick up one of Howard's, the book that he wrote that story appears in, among many, many more just like that will have you laughing and also bring a tear to your eyes. And thanks so much, Howard, for being with us tonight.
And thank you for reading it, Neil. I think you did an admirable job.
Thank you.
Howard, I have a question. This is Steve. Is that a story from your childhood?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely.
Wow. What a warm story. That is just so great. That's yep. Super. And were you living in this was from Germany then, when you were in Germany growing up?
No. I came over here when I was 4 years old. I was 11 at the time, and we lived in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey. That's where this place is.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank
My
you.
Father was a patent attorney, and he spoke five languages, so he dealt with foreign patents. But in the Depression, there weren't too many people applying for patents.
Low doors.
Yeah. Well, you know, Howard, after the Depression, I'm not quite as old as you, I like to hang around you because you seem to have discovered longevity, and I enjoy going to have breakfast with you on Thursdays with Howard. And but I can recall back in the 30s, Steve, you probably can too. You're there at my age. And I think you're even older than I am, Steve. I'm going to reveal a little bit how – I won't reveal your age, but at any rate, I remember in North Carolina that we too, Howard, put cardboard in our shoes.
It was not uncommon, I'm sure.
Yeah, and that was back in the 30s and the 40s.
Yeah.
And, I hear people that used to walk down the railroad tracks – to collect the coal.
The coal, yeah.
There you go, yeah. Okay, back to you, Steve.
Yes, thanks. And Cecile, would you like to tell us of a favorite Christmas memory, please?
Sure will, but I have to tell you, the stories I've just heard this evening are absolutely awesome. Howard, that was a beautiful story, and the one before, too, was great. Well, what I'd like to share is an Eastern Airlines story. During Christmas, one of the jobs I held was a gate agent at Miami Airport, and what they would do every year is have a make-believe flight for children that had terminal cancer. And I was the lucky one to be able to board the children on the plane. And what we would do is put up a sign that the plane was going to the North Pole. Santa, of course, was there. And it was really a quite emotional flight. Children, there was usually about 20 to 30 children. You could tell that they were very sick. And the pilot would come out, the flight attendants would come out and greet them. They would actually go on the aircraft, look out the window. Of course, we never took off, but the pilot would start the engine, but you know, it would just make the noise, and the children were so excited. The flight attendants would do their announcement, and of course, we would give them Eastern Wings. So I think that's one of the most memorable things, that they would get a boarding card and their faces were so happy. So that to me is one of the most memorable Christmases at Eastern Airlines.
Cecile,
yes,
I believe they still do that, don't they? The Silver Liners.
I don't know.
Yeah, I believe the Silver Liners still do that every year this time, it seems to me.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome, but that they still do.
But, you know, that's another thing that all of us remember about the great airlines that Eastern Airlines was. It was because of the people that came up with ideas like that. And it just made a great, great, great airline.
It did. It made you really proud to be part of Eastern. And it was really, really great. It was really good. I think the manager there took pictures of it. If I could round some up, I'll send them to you. Because I know
great.
Where she's at. So that would be great.
Put them on the website. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Yes.
That's my story.
Thanks, Cecile. And Chuck, what can you share with us about a favorite Christmas memory, sir?
Well, mine's a little on the lighter side. Some years back, a lot of years back, because my children are grown now and have children of their own, my children asked me one time, could we go and see the snow? Because they were born in Miami, Florida, and they had never seen snow. And we had a favorite uncle who lived in Burlington, just outside of Boston, Mass. And we called him up, and sure, they would be glad to have us for a couple of days or whatever we could get off for work. And so I had accumulated some C3 passes, and we all got our clothes and bundled up and everything because we knew it was going to be cold getting off the plane. And we had a baby with us. My youngest was probably only about 7 months old, and the older one was about 3. So we got on the airplane, got settled in, and we were in the coach section back there. And just before they shut the door, the flight attendant came over and said that they noticed that we were employees on C3 passes, and the plane was almost empty. Now, the reason for that is because some guy at work had told me the best time to fly on an airplane is on a holiday. So we flew on Christmas. So the first class section probably only had maybe 1 or 2 or 3 people in it, and the rest of it was empty. So we went on up and sat in the front middle section of an L-1011 jumbo jet. And no sooner had we got off the ground and got some altitude than the baby started crying. And she just wouldn't stop crying. We had given her a bottle and everything else, and we found out later it was a pressurization problem in her ear. So I decided to get up and go into the lavatory up front by the cockpit and sit there with a crying baby. Well, I took a bottle with them, and we got in there, and she kept crying and kept crying. And finally, she started to get sleepy, and she went to sleep for a while. But then she woke up, and she started crying some more. And finally, my wife knocked on the door and gave me another bottle of milk there, and she quieted down a little bit. So we finally got to Boston, touched down, went to the terminal, and the baby was actually asleep when I came out of the lavatory. And as I come out of the lavatory, the 6 people or whatever it is, they all stood up and clapped for me because I had spent the whole 3 hours and some odd minutes in the lavatory up front while we were going to Boston. And as soon as we got on the ground, the baby stopped crying. So that was our memorable flight to go see the snow in Boston.
That's great, Chuck. Good story. Great story.
Thank you.
And George, I always remember this time of the year and of my many New York layovers and chestnuts roasting on the open fire in downtown Manhattan. I remember my layovers in Manhattan, and my pulse rate would jump about 20 beats just crossing either river into Manhattan because I was anticipating the excitement I expected on the layover, especially this time of the year. George, can you share a favorite seasonal memory with us?
Yeah, sure. I can do that. But my story, it doesn't come from my Eastern days, but rather from when I was flying for U.S. Air. But it definitely did have a connection to Eastern. At Eastern, I always had enough seniority to bid off on Christmas, but that wasn't the case my first Christmas at U.S. Air, because I started there as a co-pilot on their largest and highest-paying jet, which at the time was the 727. And that meant that I was one of the low men on the totem pole. But they also had the equivalent of the Type 2 at U.S. Air. I guess for those of you who aren't pilots, what that meant was you could fly another trip and substitute it for a trip that was on your line of flying. At Eastern, you couldn't do that over certain holidays, including Christmas, but at U.S. Airway or U.S. Air at the time, you could, provided they had enough people to cover the trip. So senior folks all bid off on Christmas Eve and day, but as poor reserves, we were certain to have to work. However, the open trips there were assigned to reserves based upon your seniority, and I was pretty senior in the reserve ranks. So I checked, and there was a trip open on Christmas Eve that got into LaGuardia around 7 o'clock that evening, and the only thing after that was a scheduled deadhead back to Pittsburgh the following afternoon. That was Christmas Day. So being married to an Italian girl meant that Christmas Eve was the night for eating fish and lobster, which dates back to the time the church said no meat on Christmas Eve for us Catholics. If you remember, you had to wait until midnight if you wanted to have a hamburger. So anyway, I bid, and I was subsequently awarded that trip, but I never told anyone. And the final leg went from Charlotte to LaGuardia, and it was mine. So I flew that 7.2 at about Mach 0.88 all the way up there and used every trick I learned from flying in and out of LaGuardia for 18 years with Eastern. And we arrived at the gate. It was about a half hour early. So I hopped into my car, which I left parked right across the street in the pay lot, and arrived home a little less than an hour later. And the expressions on my children's faces were enough for me because no one expected me to even be there. I had a great dinner with my wife, my three kids, and my in-laws. And after dinner, my wife and I put all the gifts for the kids under the tree and had the entire next day at home with the family.
Oh, great.
That was the only trip that I ever worked on Christmas, because after that I always had enough seniority to bid off. But that turned out to be one of my personal bests. However, the story doesn't end there. The day after Christmas, I was on the jump seat to go back to Pittsburgh, where I was based with U.S. Air, on the same equipment. It was a 727. And I got to the gate, and I recognized the co-pilot, who also lived in New York. And U.S. Air was a little bit different than Eastern in that if you were qualified on an airplane and at the same plane that you were on, and I had listed myself on a jump seat, it didn't matter, but you could actually fly the trip for the co-pilot or the captain or whatever you happened to be at the time so that that person could get off. And this guy said, oh, you know, I've worked Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and I'm going back to Pittsburgh this afternoon, and I won't be home until this evening. Now, this was the day after Christmas. So he said, would you fly the trip back to Pittsburgh for me? I said, certainly. I had on a pair of jeans and, you know, a long-sleeve shirt and a jacket, but there was no dress code. So here I was sitting in the cockpit the day after Christmas. This gentleman got off and wound up going home, so at least he got home like maybe 8 or 9 hours before he would have had he had to fly that last leg. So
yeah,
it was just everything. If I had planned it, it couldn't have worked out better. That's one of my best memories from Christmas.
Very good.
That's a great story. Speaking of scheduling of pilots, this might warrant a little discussion among us. Can any of us tell, or can any of you tell me what, during the days of Eastern, what the most difficult day for scheduling pilots was? What holiday or any other event became the most difficult today to schedule crews?
I would suggest that without a doubt it was Christmas, because when I was home here for every one of my Christmases at Eastern and I was a line holder, my phone, I had two phones, but my public phone would ring off the hook all night on Christmas Eve, and, you know, they would leave a message, you know, oh, we need you for a trip tomorrow. Of course, you know, if you were like me, you never answered the phone on holiday. But, you know, I would say it was Christmas.
Well,
does anybody have a different idea?
Well, being another pilot flying for Eastern, I too would have to agree with George, although I want to say probably New Year's, but
that's what I'd say, New Year's.
Yeah, but everybody was drunk. But yeah, I agree with George. I think it's Christmas. Do you have proof of another day, Steve?
Yes, it was Super Bowl Day.
Oh,
that was
oh,
the
my
most
goodness.
Difficult scheduling day of the year.
Never even thought of that.
No,
I would never
have
thought of that one.
Wow, wow.
And it's coming up.
Now, you know, let me ask a question of Cecile. Cecile, you had seniority in the department that you worked, I guess. And were you able to bid for holidays such as Christmas off, or were you too junior to do that? Did you have to work through Christmas?
I was lucky. I had a lot of seniority, so I did not work Christmas. And there were a lot of other agents that at that time you could swap hours, and a lot of people would like to work Christmas because you have the double time. So if I didn't, but normally I would get it off. I was lucky.
And John Roos, how about you?
Well, Neil, I was going to have another story, but I remember a story actually that we used to do at Christmas time. There's an organization in Philadelphia called the Sunshine Foundation, and every year, on multiple occasions, we would fly kids from the Sunshine Foundation to Orlando, and they suffered from a condition which was called propecia, which the children would age over a course of maybe a 10-year-old child would age over the course of an 80-year-old adult, and these kids would literally look like like they were 80 years old and they were only 10 years old. And we used to fly them to Disney World in Orlando, and every year we'd have, you know, a lot of different, we'd have several different occasions we would fly them. And the most moving time of the year was Christmas, when you would see their eyes light up when they were going to Florida to see Mickey Mouse and, you know, all the things in Disney World. And it was really touching because they didn't have much longer to live, unfortunately, and they still don't. And it was started by the foundation, actually, was started by a retired Philadelphia police officer who built this thing up over the years and is still, you know, going strong. But like I said, to see those kids' eyes light up on Christmas was the best gift of all. I mean, you couldn't ask for anything more.
Yeah.
And that was something that we always did at Eastern that was special, that we all remembered, and we would all, you know, I mean, it would really make us choke up to see these poor kids, you know, get on that airplane but they were going to Orlando to Disney World, and they were going to, you know, hopefully fulfill some of their dreams before it was over. So that was a special time, and they still do it. And if I had the means and the wherewithal, I'd finance the whole program.
You know, John, my granddaughter was worked for Disney in the college program this year, and she really enjoyed it. I'm not certain whether she'll go back. I think she would like to if she could get a different assignment. She worked in a restaurant, and something pizza. I forgot the name of it.
Right.
But at any rate, I would imagine that Disney World on Christmas really has some great entertainment for especially children like this. And
They sure do. They do, by all means. And like I said, you know, just watching those kids, I mean, if you were there, you would just, it was very moving experience. And as I said, I was going to tell another story about Eastern at Christmas time, but that that was the most meaningful story I could think of. But, you know, the other time was when I slept with the bags.
There you go.
Oh, wait, let's clarify that a little bit.
Clarify that a little bit more.
Let's see, Cecile, would you turn your mic, your headset off?
I mean, you know, we've all done that on occasion, but, you know.
One of the other supervisors, One of the other supervisors, George Harmon, came to me one day around Christmas time, and we had there was a late season storm in Miami, and a lot of the flights that were going out of Miami to Philadelphia were delayed and canceled and et cetera, et cetera. And of course, you know, Miami was a major hub, Philadelphia was a major hub, and my job was to sleep with the bags overnight in the baggage claim area at Philadelphia International Airport. We had about 4,000 bags in the baggage claim area that night, and I was asleep trying to sleep in the baggage claim office, to make sure that nobody stole the bags. Well, needless to say, I spent the whole night in that room, looking out over that whole area in the baggage claim area. There was not a soul to be found except one guy who was on the payphone, who was a cleaner at the airport, probably talking, I hope, to his girlfriend all night on the phone. And I watched him from 10 o'clock at night until 6 o'clock in the morning, and he was the only one there besides me. And there was nobody else, so I had all the bags to myself. But it was a special time. It was a great time. I loved Eastern, and I loved working there. And I just pray to God it comes back soon. And it was just an experience that most people will never experience again with the camaraderie and the everybody watching out for everybody else. You know, it was just the good old days, so to speak.
Yeah.
It really was. Neil, can you add to these great holiday memories?
Well, I could tell my now 2 years, this would be 3 years, about me spending Christmas Eve and Christmas in Bethlehem. Of course, that was Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, at the ABE, the designation of the city, Allentown, Bethlehem, Easton Airport, and we stayed at the Bethlehem Hotel. So I won't go into that again, but instead I would like to ask Howard your early day memories, Howard, of being in Germany. Of course, I think you said, what, you were 4 years old when you came
here?
Yeah,
I don't really remember anything there at all, no.
Okay. Yeah, I would have a hard time going back when I was 4 years old.
But, I remember going to school here in New York City, and of course I spoke only German at the time. But in a very short space of time, I managed to make myself understood and quickly grasp the English language. So I had no problems at all that I can recall.
Well, you have done exceedingly well with your book, because I think you're a real wordsmith. And you've done a remarkable job with the many stories that you have told in all the stories from here to there. So I appreciate it. That's about all I have. I would like to say that a lot of our groups around the Eastern system have had Christmas parties, and we're about a week late from making an announcement as to the many parties that the EARA chapters around the system have held, and that's what keeps all the Eastern people together, really. It's organizations like EARA, Silver Liners, Retired Eastern Pilots Association, and the Silver Falcons, and some others that keep people thinking of Eastern. And I know that every day goes by that I think of something about Eastern Airlines. Of course, I live with a lot of Eastern memorabilia that since we've been moving the last few days, I've found several pieces of glassware. And I even found an old mail sack, an Eastern Airlines mail sack dating back to the Pitcairn days of the airmail routes that Eastern had before it became a passenger-carrying airline. So I've got one of those. That's a real antique. Don't know what I'll do with it. Perhaps offer it on eBay. And but
Neil, they have a museum in Miami with memorabilia donated by Eastern Airlines people, and they have a lot of items there.
Okay, very good. That's a thought. This year I think I'll do that. I'll look into that. If you can get me a name of a contact person or something, maybe I can call Vito Borelli with the ARA, and perhaps he can steer me over there.
Sure will. Okay, I'll get you that too also.
Very good. Great show tonight, guys.
Yeah, I'd like to say to everybody, this is Howard. Merry Christmas and all the best for the new year. And let's hope we have many more admirable performances.
Thank you for that.
Thank
and
you, Howard.
And Merry Christmas to all of you and all of our listeners. And we hope you have a beautiful, well, holiday with all of your friends and family. And I hear the champagne music in the background, so it must be time to say good night. We hope that you enjoyed tonight's show, and you'll tell your friends about us, especially other members of the Eastern family. Tune in next week when the radio voice of Eastern Airlines brings you the sounds of Christmas. We wish you a very joyful holiday season this week. And so from all of us here at the EAL Radio Show until next week, keep the blue side up, have plenty of airspeed, plenty of altitude. Merry Christmas, everyone. Good night.
Merry Christmas. Good night, Eastern family.
Merry Christmas, everyone. Good night.